This is TalkBack, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309.
This is News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. KGVO, Missoula's news and weather station.
Hey, good morning, everyone, and welcome. It is the Wednesday, March 11th edition of TalkBack. And TalkBack this morning is brought to you by our friends at Bruckner's Truck and Equipment. Heavy-duty truck sales, parts, and service. Call Bruckner's. Again, these are all 406 area code numbers, 541-9097. Quality seamless gutters. Gutter expert gutter installation and repair. Get a free quote by calling 728-4002 for quality seamless gutters. Y West Storage out at the Y on Two Smokes Way. Secure flexible self-storage in Missoula. To reserve your unit, call 510-0590. Busy Bees Cleaning Service, commercial cleaning you can trust. Call Busy Bees at 550-3219 and get a free estimate. Pivots Plus is Montana's leader in irrigation parts, service, and sales. Call Pivots Plus, 683-4418. Gomer's Diesel, diesel repair parts and service in Missoula. The number 728-7620 for Gomer's. And by Harrington Surgical Supply, providing medical and surgical supplies to healthcare professionals all across western Montana. Give them a call today. 721-8468.
The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of TalkBack. Peter Christian here, Mr. Nick Christensen over there. Good morning, Mr. Nick.
Good morning.
And here in the studio with us is one of our favorite guests, almost a part-time host, ladies and gentlemen, our one and only Walt Kiro from Elevated Tax and Accounting, our resident CPA. How you doing, partner?
Wonderful. You know, I can't remember how long I've been doing this, but it goes back quite a few years. I think I'm getting comfortable here.
We need to get you your own chair is what we need you to do. All right. So good morning, sir. And you have your fabulous stack of stuff in front of you.
Yeah. And today, you know, I hate missing a week. But what happens is once every three months,
right.
We have to have a 2 week space, 3 week space in between show. So this happens to be, it's been 3 weeks, and boy, anyway, I got prepared for the show, and the beginning of the show, you know, we like to address a little time for, I won't say lecture, but discussion of important matters, especially when it comes to tax. Today is the fifth session of tax time, and I'm going to be talking about spending reform. And spending reform has to do with our good old buddy, economist Milton Friedman. Now, why do I hammer on this? And the reason I hammer on it is because if you think about it, what drives taxation? Well, spending drives taxation. And unfortunately, as I'll get into it, our system of government, it has not been set up to reward saving. Instead, it rewards spending. And so if I could come up with a magic way of getting that switched so that people would start thinking about saving money, that would be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a good thing because
right.
A lot of our ills with government and policy and tax policy and spending policy would be working. And we wouldn't have as much pressure. And so spending reform, and I liken it to, you know, you'll hear in Montana about, oh, we need a third leg of taxes for this stool so we can sit on it. And I really contend, and I brought this up to the executive director of the Montana Taxpayers Association, Bob Story. I'm saying, why can't we treat the third leg as spending reform? And so we all go through our lives where we run into times where we don't have enough money.
That's right.
And we have our spending. So, and this happens. People this is a natural thing. You get a raise or you go to a new job and you make more money. What happens? You raise your spending to match your income. You know, there are a lot of people
out
there.
That's human nature, though.
Yeah, but there are a lot of people out there who are disciplined, and they save some money. So, but I want to address spending, and it's a ways to ease the pressure to raise taxes and put pressure on the opposite, on waste, frauds, and abuses. So I want to talk through one of the cleanest ways to discuss the explanation of government spending you'll ever hear. And this comes from the economist Milton Friedman. It's called The Four Ways to Spend Money. And don't worry, this isn't a lecture. This is one of those ideas that right. once you hear it, you'll start seeing it everywhere, including your own household budget, in Helena, in Washington, and in every bureaucracy you ever dealt with. This is something that just exists.
And if you think of it, every household is a mini bureaucracy, right?
Right.
Yeah, because you're trying to make ends meet. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yeah, well, the point there is, and I like to bring this up, is because for years and decades, I've heard, well, what are you going to cut when it comes to government spending? And I'm saying, well, we can start with everything, but then on the other hand, people like to pick and choose and all this and all that. But the big downfall to all that discussion is it ignores the fourth way of spending money, and I'll get to that here shortly. But because of that ignorance, you end up in a situation where you just go on and on. And I liken our system of government and the way we spend money as insanity. Because we want to have a different result, but we keep doing the same thing. And so to expect a different result by doing the same thing, how's that work? It doesn't work. And so, you know, we need to think that through. So the reason why I want to talk about tax spending is that tax policy, tax assessment, tax collection are all impacted by spending. I look to spending reform as an important tax reform. I look to spending reduction as a third leg of the stool, as I was telling you, to balance a budget at any level, city, county, state, national, or personal. So the four ways to spend money. And Milton Friedman argued this, that how money is spent determines how carefully it is spent.
Mm-hmm.
And the key variable is whose money is being spent and for whose benefit is that spending helping. So the clean breakdown, the four ways to spend money. You, Peter, spend money on yourself.
Yes.
And why is that the best way to spend money if you're going to spend money? You utilize maximum care, unless you're a drunk sailor or a politician.
Okay.
Why? Why do you want to, you know, when you spend money on yourself, why is it you want the best value and you feel that you feel the cost directly? So it impacts you directly. Here's the perfect example. Buying your own lunch. You shop for the price and the quality, period. The second way to spend money, you spend your own money on somebody else. You, Peter, spend money on Lorna. The incentive is you still watch the cost, but not the value as closely. Why is it the second way of spending money? You're paying, but you don't personally consume the result. You personally. Lorna does. An example is of this is buying a birthday gift for Lorna. You stay on budget, but you may not optimize Lorna's preferences. See, there's a little subtle variation there, but it's an important subtle variation. Then here we start. This is where we start getting off the rails. Number three way of spending money. You spend somebody else's money on yourself. The incentive is you maximize value for yourself. But you're less careful about the cost. Why? You benefit, but you don't bear the burden, the financial burden, that is. An example of this is when, say, Town Square says, Peter, well, you can go to a business conference, and, you know, we're going to pay for your registration and your meals. Well, you choose the meal that you like, but it's not necessarily the cheapest or the most frugal. Okay, and then here's where it really gets off the rails. You spend somebody else's money on somebody else.
Okay.
So you have neither responsibility for the money or what the results are. The incentive, there is no incentive. It's the lowest care for both the cost and value. You don't have a lot of skin in the game.
Right.
Either physically, emotionally, or anything.
Like, it's not my money. Well, yeah. Who cares?
Yeah, who cares?
Right.
Why? You don't pay and you don't personally benefit. There's two items that are in play here. Who's paying and who's benefiting? Here's the example of the worst way to spend money. Government programs, corporate bureaucracy, or any system where the spender is neither the payer or the beneficiary. Friedman famously said this fourth category is where waste explodes. Well, and I like to include fraud. Let's just look at Minnesota. And because the incentives for efficiency collapse under the fourth way of spending money. So it's imperative that we put the guardrails on how big government gets. So if we're in Missoula and spending money like no tomorrow on bond issues or whatnot,
right.
Just think about that. We got to take a break.
Yes.
But
yeah,
I'm not quite done.
Yeah, we're going to come right back. 721-1290 is the number. We're going to take phone calls here in a little while, but we're going to let Walt. We've got very important issues to speak of before we do that. We'll be right back after this. Time out.
Dennis Bragg with your forecast heading into what looks to be one of the most robust storms of the winter to finish this week. Snow moving into the high country Wednesday afternoon, starting the pile up of what is expected to be feet of snow by Saturday. Coupled with ridgetop winds gusting up to 70 miles per hour, that means impossible and dangerous travel in the backcountry. Passes will be difficult as well, so plan your travel accordingly. In the valleys, we could see some morning snow or mixed rain and snow showers as lows are down around freezing, but the main feature will be heavy rain at times.
Welcome back to Talk Back, and we are privileged to have with us Walt Kiro here in the studio this morning with Elevated Tax and Accounting, and we are in our instructional phase here,
let's
continue.
Okay, yeah. And to wrap this up, you know, just a couple of minutes and we'll move on after the next break, but why this spending framework matters. Now, just a little bit of background. Milton Friedman was an economist, and I think they eventually gave him a Nobel Prize. But he was an economist at the University of Chicago. He was there for many, many years. And him and his wife, Rose, died. But they put their money into a foundation for school choice.
Wow.
And so they're big on school choice. But why he came up with this framework of spending is important, and it makes sense. Now, I've never heard Dr. Barkey talk about it, but I'm sure he knows all about this concept, and Dr. Friedman for sure. But why this framework of spending in four different ways matters, it explains why markets work and why markets tend to be efficient. If you remember, the first category of spending is where you spend money on yourself. Well, that's closely aligned with the marketplace. And that's usually the most efficient way of either spending money or dealing with your wants and needs and desires. It explains why bureaucracies and governments struggle with spending money, because they dominate in category four, which is other people spending other people's money. And they may give the gift to gab and they say, well, we really care about money. But they don't really, because they don't have skin in the game. Now, you can say, well, I pay my taxes, but they don't have a big caring about the result. They just want to get more money and more power spending that money. And so they're always going to be in the mode of growing government,
because money equals power, right?
Yes.
And so when you have power, then half your goal is met, and then on you go from there.
Yeah. A good friend of mine, and he's now deceased, but he was from Whitehall and a ranching family. But he told me, Walt, you know, government's like a hog. The more you feed it, the more it'll eat. And so just think about that concept,
right.
Especially in Missoula City, Missoula County. It just wants to grow and grow and grow and spend more money. Well, it's nice if you can spend money. I mean, it makes you feel good because you think you're doing some good. But the reality is, are you really? So anyway, this four ways of spending money is a simple way to diagnose misaligned incentives. Incentives in policy, nonprofits, and even corporations. I do know, working with corporations, both large and small, the bigger the corporation, the more inefficient it becomes because it has so many rules. And when you're dealing with your business affairs or transactions that are complicated and have more and more rules, it just becomes inefficient. And over the years, I have looked at, well, what parts of the economy are the costs going up faster than the rate of inflation? And in my lifetime, in looking at it, education and healthcare has gone up much faster than inflation. And why? Because the consumer of that, whether it's a student or a healthcare patient, is farther and farther separated from the funding source and the provider. Hence, we got insurance companies in the middle, or God forbid, marketplaces.
Right.
You know, Obamacare is an example. And the more you emphasize that, it becomes impossible to spend less money on those things. Anyway, I'm done.
We're going to take another break, come right back, and when we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines, and if you have a question or a comment for Walt Kiro, give us a call at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Coming right back after this. We are back. This is Talk Back, and the educational part of our program is over with Walt Kiro from Elevated Tax and Accounting, and now we are talking to class members. So folks are waiting to visit with you, sir. And Skip is up first. Skip, good morning. You're on with Walt. Go ahead.
Hi, Skip.
Hello, Walt. Thanks for coming on.
No problem.
Peter, and I hope everybody's going to have a good day today. But I can tell you, with all due respect to Mr. Friedman, I've had girlfriends that knew a whole lot more ways to spend money than just four.
So. Oh, and you found out the hard way. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, that's a nice way to put it. So I just wanted to ask you a question about what's coming up in the next legislative session. Is I know that the governor, for instance, is going to be pushing for something that I think that it'd be good for everybody to understand ahead of time as much as possible what it is. And that is that he is going to be pushing for some sort of a flat tax. And I wonder if you could give us the cliff notes on what that is. And it's easy to say it, but I know there's a few pieces to it that are going to be interesting to get through even in the interim before the next session. Would you please tell us what it is that he says he wants to do with that? And if in fact you've encountered it. If not, just we'll go to something else.
Thanks, Skip. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, Skip. Well, right now in Montana, we only have two brackets. And, you know, that was done a few years ago. And I think what the governor is pushing for is something that I would deem as esoteric. In other words, it's just for show. But it has a meaning. And the show is he wants to be able to get Montana's tax rate as low as possible. And one way you do that is get rid of – there's a 4.7% tax bracket, and then a 5.9% tax bracket in Montana. If you get rid of the lower bracket and you wanted to just fix on a number, you might end up with a tax rate of 5.5. Let's just say, for example, I don't know how the math would work out.
Right.
So the whole point is when people look to Montana and say, well, do I want to move there? Do I want to retire there? Or this or that, the other thing. It's easier to sell when you have a lower tax rate than compared to your neighbors. And so all of a sudden that becomes an incentive. So I think, you know, in terms of a flat tax, from my perspective, we're pretty close to there already. It's just that 4.7% tax bracket is a small bracket. It's not like on the first 100,000. It's like on the first 20, 30,000. And then you go from there. So we're really kind of, from my perspective, at a flat tax now. But to be a pure flat tax, you just have one rate. And that's the way to go. Now, there's also a capital gain rate, because capital gains in Montana gets a rate bracket benefit, but it's in the form of a credit on that income only. So, but I see what he's trying to get at, and I think it's okay. I don't think it's not going to make a huge difference one way or the other, because the legislature has, we've just been talking about, is going to have 50 million people in there asking for money, and they're going to say, well, here's what we can afford, and then the fight ensues.
Exactly. We're going to come right back. Phone lines are open. If you have a question or a comment for Walt Kiroff, Elevated Tax and Accounting, our resident CPA, give us a call. 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. Looking forward to hearing from you coming right up.
Have you heard the news?
Dennis Bragg with your forecast heading into what looks to be one of the most robust storms of the winter to finish this week. Snow moving into the high country Wednesday afternoon, starting the pileup of what is expected to be feet of snow by Saturday. Coupled with ridgetop winds gusting up to 70 miles per hour, that means impossible and dangerous travel in the backcountry. Passes will be difficult as well, so plan your travel accordingly. In the valleys, we could see some morning snow or mixed rain and snow showers as lows are down around freezing, but the main feature will be heavy rain at times.
We are back. This is Talk Back. 721-1290 is the number. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls. I'm Peter Christian. Our featured guest here in the studio is Walt Kiro from Elevated Tax and Accounting, here to share his well over 50 years of tax preparation experience. So, Walt, you're looking good, man. Let me tell you.
Thanks.
All right. We've got folks waiting on the line. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, please. Yeah, there's something
you
want to
just
add.
Follow up on Skip's question. You know, it's kind of hard to read somebody's mind, like where the governor is coming from. But from I consider myself fiscally conservative. I won't say I'm Democrat or Republican. I'm just fiscally conservative. And I really want, government to be small and think about getting smaller. But in terms of the governor, I think he's trying to promote Montana at the same time. And that's one way of doing it, but that's just my best guess as to what's going on inside of that noodle of his.
Right. Okay. All right. Let's get some calls in. Al is up first. Al, good morning. Thanks for holding. Go ahead. You're on with Walt.
Hi, Al. Hey,
good morning. Thank you for coming on board here, Walt. I got a question. My financial outfit, both of my taxable accounts, I got figures not final.
Oh, yeah.
That was the early part of February. And a week later, one of the two, I got another letter. It says figures final for one of the two, but I'm still needing the figures for the second one.
Mm-hmm.
And just for curiosity, the one that said finalized, I went back, and I think there's like a $56 increase in difference, so it wasn't very much. Anyway, I'm a nervous Nelly and like to file my taxes early, but you can see what's coming up. It ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
So,
can he file a partial return? No. Okay. No.
Well, let's just, I'm looking at the figures, not final, from my financial outfit, and it does say, not that I believe it, it says we expect to furnish you the final forms by early March or by March 15th, and that's coming up.
Yeah.
Supposing I don't get it here, this is an unfair question to ask you, but if you probably wouldn't want to say this on the air. Do you ever do your taxes for somebody using the figures not final figures?
I try to avoid it because the last thing you want to do is amend a return. I amend returns quite often, but it's just a pain, and it's best to avoid it if possible. What I suspect is the second account you have, Al, has got some what I would call, for lack of anything better, sophisticated investments, such as a real estate investment trust, a real estate mortgage investment conduit, REMIC is what those are called, and some kind of a thing like that. And they take forever to get those numbers out. What I would be doing is putting pressure on your investment people, is saying, hey, you know, I don't like being late on filing. So can you, down the road in the future, get me out of these crazy investments and keep me in simple investments so that I can get my 1099 on or before March 15th and go from there. But that's just going forward. For the current year, I would, you know, do the same thing as put pressure on your investment broker and saying, hey, you know, I want you to feel some of the heat, because I'm getting the heat because I don't like to be a last-minute return filer.
If you file an extension, I don't quite understand that. How can you file an extension without all the figures being in there?
Oh, you estimate. And what happens with an extension, you estimate on the best information you have available at the moment you get the extension. Now, if it was me, I wouldn't panic, because I just filed my return like day before yesterday on Monday. And I just waited, and then I made sure that I, you know, had all my T's crossed and I's dotted and all that good stuff. But we didn't have any investment brokerage statements that said, oh, numbers are preliminary, they're not final. That's what I would do. Is the extension, you've got until April 15th before you even file the extension. But if you have some, you know, sometimes, and this is what my wife and I did, we formed a limited liability partnership, and we have our investments inside that partnership. And the partnerships are due March 15th, but we've got those filed. So, the best thing to do is wait for the final numbers, and you can get an extension based upon estimate numbers, you know, using the preliminary numbers from the brokerage on that preliminary 1099.
Okay, thank you very much, Walt. You have a good day.
Okay, you bet, Al.
Appreciate the call. Thanks, Al. We're going to take a quick break. Come right back. Jeff and Wilbur are both waiting to visit with you, sir. We're going to come right back. Our guest here in the studio, Walt Kiro, Elevated Tax and Accounting, and he'll be with us till 10 o'clock. So we'll be right back after this. Hey, we're back. This is Talk Back. 721-1290 is the number. Peter Christian here. And Mr. Nick questions and taking your phone calls. Walt Kiro is our special guest. Elevated Tax and Accounting, our resident CPA, and Jeff has been waiting for a while. Jeff, good morning. Thanks for holding. You're on with Walt.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, Walt. Good morning, Nick. Good morning, Peter. Good morning, Montana, and all the ships at sea.
Yes.
there are three ways to tax people. You can tax people on what they own, you can tax people on what they earn, and you can tax them on what they spend. I guess you can tax them when they die, too, but
be here, so I'm not. Yeah, they like to get you in the grave, too.
Yeah, so of those three ways, we already do that two ways here in Montana. We tax on what we own, property tax, and we tax on what we earn, income tax.
Yeah.
And I'll be darned if I'll be allowed the third one to come into place, simply out of principle. It probably makes more sense to tax consumption, but you know what? I'm tired of them taking money, so I'm not going to give them any more tools. But I want to run something by you right now, and that's on property taxes. Property tax, in the current property tax bill that was passed last year by the rhinocrats and the Democrats in our state legislature, they established a homestead exemption of $50,000 that they would take off of the cost of your property when they calculate the property tax. However, we already have a homestead exemption, a homestead declaration in Montana that protects your equity in your home against creditors. And last year, that was $409,450. And in 2026, this year, that will climb to $425,827. So the idea I want to run by you is, why don't we just, for property taxes, replace that measly $50,000 property tax homestead declaration with the general Montana homestead declaration of $425,000, which would exempt much more people's equity in their house and greatly reduce their property taxes right now.
Yeah. Well, on the surface, I would be all for that, but that would crash the property tax system. It would be something, it wouldn't generate enough money to probably run the local mosquito district. So, you know, the $50,000 exemption would be one that the system could absorb, and it wouldn't hurt that bad to the local governments. If we went to four, go ahead.
I was going to say, after all the pain that legislature has inflicted on the Montana population, I think it's time that our elected officials feel some pain in terms of reduced money. We're saying no more. You could at least take a fraction of that 400. I mean, the difference between 50,000 and 425,000 is immense.
Yes, it is. It's huge.
And the more I look at this, the more I think it's a simple change. All they got to do is change how they calculate, how they factor in homestead exemption. A simple law passed, and bingo, all of a sudden, counties and cities, everybody who spends my money has to figure out a different way to get it. And they have to do it openly. And I would just love to, see the thrashing. I think it would be, I'd pop some popcorn and just to watch it.
Yeah, because there would be a lot of fighting. There'd be a lot of, you know, scratching and clawing and pulling hair and you name it. But that might be a fun exercise, don't you think?
I'm going to recommend it to my state senator, Greg Hertz, and I'm going to see what he has to say about it.
Well, Greg, I know Greg, and he kind of has a sense of humor. He may think it's kind of funny, but anyway, there is no simple solution here other than, you know, Peter and I were talking about that earlier in the show, is that if we lose a job and the household budget takes a hit, what do? We change how we spend and what we spend it on. And we make decisions on that basis. That is such a simple concept to implement. And I'm sure most households in this state have gone through that at one point in their life or another. And that could be done at a government level as well. But there's no intestinal cojones to do it.
Yep, I call it testicular fortitude. I want to say that you said something earlier. I want to take exception to, mild exception. You said there are no simple answers. There are simple answers, but the thing is, we've gotten confused on the difference between simple and easy.
Yeah,
it is a simple answer to implement the homestead exemption.
Yes,
it won't be easy,
right?
Because you'll have all sorts of people up against it. So I just wanted to. Use a little wordsmithing there, but
that's okay. I've got a thick skin. I've been beat on so much that I can handle it.
I can believe that. Okay. Thanks a lot, gents.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Wilbur is standing by. Wilbur, good morning and welcome to Talk Back.
Hi, Wilbur.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. So I'll kind of give you the background on my question and try to keep it short, and then you can ask whatever other question you need to get the information. I had a mini storage operation inside of a limited liability company. I sold the mini storage operation, but held the contract for 5 years within the LLC. And then there was a payoff due after the five-year period for a balloon payment. I kept the LLC operational in hopes of trying to find another one to purchase, or another mini storage to purchase, but wasn't able to. And so I have this income coming in, and I was wondering if that income would be eligible for self-employment pension funds. I've been told it's a passive income rather than an active income because I was receiving money from the contract as opposed to actually operating a facility.
Yeah.
Your take on that?
Yeah, that's pretty much true, but I would have to look at how the return was prepared, because when you have an installment sale, and that's what's happened, you're most likely have reported your income over the life of the contract. And so as you get a dollar of principal on the contract, you pay, let's just say 50% of it was capital gain and 50% was return of your own investment. So you have 50 cents of capital gain on a dollar, and then you multiply that by your long-term capital gain rates.
In this particular case, it was interest-only payments for 5 years, and then all the capital on the balloon payment.
Okay. And again, that's not going to change this, because the percentage, your gross profit percentage, which is calculated in the year of sale. So if it's 60% profit, so as you get a dollar of principal, in this case your balloon payment, 60% of that payment will be capital gain. Now, it would be interesting to see your mini storage is were those rents monthly or daily or weekly or long term, or what was the terms on the rent?
On the rent, when I was actually operating the mini storage, it was monthly rent, and then when I sold the facility, then I just received monthly interest only payments from the buyer.
Yeah, and where I want to come at with this is most capital gain is considered passive and considered from investment. But there's a difference depending upon the type of asset that was sold. Because you were a business, so to speak, even though it was a rental, it was short-term rental, and you took depreciation. Now, to the extent you take depreciation, the category is not passive income, but what we call trade or business income. Under, I hate to go here, but I'm going to go with a code section, code section 1231. And if it's 1231, then it's considered trade or business income. And that gets treated in some nuances of tax law differently than passive income. And so I would need to take a look at that and see if there would be something that could be done on that. Because trade or business income gets a more favorable treatment than passive income. The other thing that comes into play is when the property was sold, usually depreciation recapture is taken into account. But were your assets fully depreciated, or were they just partially?
Fully depreciated at the time of sale.
Yeah, okay. So what happens is that big number comes home to roost, but that gets caught up in when you collect on the contract. So there'll be some nuances there. And let me see if I can get back. Can you restate the original question? I got so bogged down in details.
Well, my question was, of course, I wanted to take self-employment pension, apply some of the income towards self-employment pension to help lower the tax basis a little bit.
Yeah.
And I was told that I couldn't because it was passive income, not active income.
Yeah. And I still contend that true. Even if it's 1231 income, it's still capital gain. And the best you could do is, you need to have self-employment income in order to get a retirement deduction. And that's what you're after. And it's kind of hard to convert that into... it's hard to convert that into ordinary self-employment income.
Okay. Even with the limited liability company, when I was in operation, we didn't actually receive an income. We didn't pay ourselves. So our income was basically just whether the business had a profit or loss.
Yeah. Oh, hey, Wilbur, why don't you hang on? We're good. We got to take a break.
We'll be right back. We'll wrap this. Okay. This is an important conversation. We'll be right back after this. Back on Talk Back. We got about 2.5 minutes left in this part of the show. So let's talk with Wilbur.
Okay, Wilbur, one more thought. And this, I was able to collect my thoughts during the commercial break. Or as Rush would say, an obscene profit break. But you could, if circumstances dictate, and that's a heck of a caveat, but you could kick out a management fee from the LLC to you personally for managing the LLC. And that management fee is subject to both income tax and self-employment tax. So you could create self-employment income because you probably managed this property for the 15, 20 years that you ran the LLC and never took a management fee. So depending upon facts and circumstances, you could do that to create self-employment income. But your LLC would have to write you a check personally for your quote-unquote management fee, and you would have to structure some kind of a written document to indicate that you had a contract with the LLC and you made a payment according to the contract and it was reasonable under the circumstances. So if you had hired a management firm for the storage facility, you'd probably been paying 6, 8, or even 10% on those rentals. So you could create, you know, self-employment income that way.
It'd be kind of tough to do after the fact. The sale was, the final payment was made in January of this year. So yeah. It would be tough to go back and show management payments for previous years.
Not necessarily. But before you do that, I would see if you have a legal counsel would say, if I did this, would it be enforceable in Montana? Because I'm not an attorney. But I have done things like this in the past, and usually on a proactive basis. But even after the fact, I can't get into it now. But there's a thing called deferred compensation, and that can be done after something has been done, like in your situation. So anyway, I would talk to my legal counsel if you have one.
Very good.
Okay.
Well, thanks for your time. I appreciate the help.
No problem, Wilbur. Good luck.
Wilbur, thanks for the call. And when we come back, Dave is very patiently waiting, so we'll keep him on. Also, Walt's going to be here for another hour, so if you want to get in the queue, a lot of folks are craving his advice with over 50 years of accounting experience, elevated tax and accounting, and Walt Kiro joining us here in the studio. Another hour is coming up. 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. And we hope that you will join us. And Dave, he's very patient. We love Dave. So Dave's a regular caller. So he will have his question when we come right back after the break. Again, that's 721-1290, 1-800-568-5309. Talk Back will continue right after the top of the hour news. So please stay with us.
This is Talk Back, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309.
This is News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. KGVO, Missoula's news and weather station.
Welcome back. It's hour number two of Talk Back for this Wednesday, March 11th. Talk Back this morning brought to you by Harrington Surgical Supply, providing medical and surgical supplies to healthcare professionals across Western Montana. The number 721-8468. These are all 406 numbers, of course. Gomer's Diesel Incorporated, diesel repair, parts and service in Missoula, 728-7620. Pivots Plus is Montana's leader in irrigation parts, service, and sales. Call Pivots Plus, 683-4418. Busy Bees Cleaning Service, commercial cleaning you can trust. Call 550-3219. Get a free estimate there. Bruckner's Truck and Equipment, heavy-duty truck sales, parts and service. Call 541-9097.
Quality Seamless Gutters, expert gutter installation and repair. Call Quality Seamless Gutters at 728-4002. And by Y-West Storage, secure flexible self-storage in Missoula. Their number 510-0590 to reserve your unit at Y-West.
The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
Welcome back. Good to have you along this morning. Hour number two of TalkBack. Peter Christian here, Nick Questions, and busily taking your phone calls for our featured guest, Walt Kiro from Elevated Tax and Accounting, our resident CPA. And I want to just say thank you to Dave for holding all the way through the break. Dave, thanks for your patience. Go ahead.
Hi, Dave.
Yeah, good morning. I wanted to talk to the governor, to gripe to the governor about this subject, but since I didn't get a chance to get on the air and talk to him, so I'm going to gripe to you.
Oh, go ahead.
Double taxation. From what I understand, for the last 2 years now, we can no longer use federal tax money that we paid into the federal government as a deduction for state taxes.
Yeah.
And, yes, and I don't think double taxation is right, and it bothers me. So I didn't get to talk to the governor about it. You get to
you get the wrath of Dave.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yes. Well, it was based on a trade-off, and the trade-off was this: is in exchange for a lower tax rate, they got rid of the federal tax deduction. Now, the bottom line scheme of things, did it change much? Probably not that much, but it does give that cause to look at that. The other thing is that most states with an income tax either severely limited federal tax deduction on state income taxes or disallowed it altogether. Montana, up until about 2-3 years ago, was one of the few states that allowed a full deduction, and then there was a reform, and then they limited it to like $10,000, per taxpayer, a federal tax deduction against the state. So, the appearance was, well, in exchange for a lower tax rate in Montana, we'll get rid of the federal tax deduction. Now, that was a political thing, and, the governor was involved with it because he signed the bill authorizing it, but the legislature itself was also involved with that.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel right. I mean, that's double taxation, like I said, so it's a gripe with me. I mean, I understand it. The other states, and even New York is, and some of the big states, that's a big problem for them, but it just doesn't feel right the way they did it.
Yeah, well, and you'll love this. This is one of my, in tax life and what I do for a living, once in a while you run into something that becomes a pet peeve. And my pet peeve in taxation is when I see a judge's ruling that talks about deductions, and your discussion here, Dave, is about a federal tax deduction on a state return. But deductions are a matter of legislative grace. And I go, really? What about the whole idea of taxation being a matter of voter or citizenry grace? And, again, that's just when I see the terms legislative grace, I kind of, you just want to throw
up.
Is
that the ultimate oxymoron? Or?
Yeah, it makes you want to throw up. But one judge said this, and some other judges like to, parrot what some other judge said. So it kind of gains a life of its own. But that's an example of, deductions being what the legislature allows.
Well, thank you, but it's going to be a pet peeve with me for a long time. Well, thank you.
Yeah, well, I understood that, but when I saw the rates go down from 11% to 8%, and then down to 6.8, and now we're down to 5.9, that's the trade-off.
Yeah, I'm still bothered by the federal deficits, and it's going up. So that bothers me too. We have to pay for what we get from government, one way or the other.
Yeah,
expect less or pay more.
All right,
Dave.
Both. Thank you for the call. With that, we're up against our first break of the hour. All the phone lines are clear, by the way. If you have a question or a comment for Walt Kiro, your taxes are going to be due here in about a month or so. April 15th is coming up faster than you might think. So if you've been it's kind of moving that tax that tax information around the kitchen table, you might want to just grab it. And if you have a question, Walt is here to answer it. 721-1290. We'll be right back after this timeout.
Cold and flu.
Dennis Bragg with your forecast heading into what looks to be one of the most robust storms of the winter to finish this week. Snow moving into the high country Wednesday afternoon, starting to pile up of what is expected to be feet of snow by Saturday. Coupled with ridgetop winds gusting up to 70 miles per hour, that means impossible and dangerous travel in the backcountry. Passes will be difficult as well, so plan your travel accordingly. In the valleys, we could see some morning snow or mixed rain and snow showers as lows are down around freezing, but the main feature will be heavy rain at times.
Hey, we're back. This is Talk Back. Peter Christian here. Mr. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls. And our featured guest here in the studio from Elevated Tax and Accounting is Walt Kiro, our resident CPA. And let's get right to the phone and say good morning to Elena. Hi, Elena.
Good morning, comrades in crime.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
What gives us the pleasure, Elena?
That sounds like a cool T-shirt, actually. But go ahead.
Yeah, KGVO.
Comrades in crime.
Peter, a question to you before I get to my main question for Walt.
Yep.
You and I go back a long, long time. You know that.
Yes, ma'am.
And you used to be on another show in the morning.
Yes, so it was called The Breakfast Club.
I thought so. Forget it. I try doing research on it. I get restaurants. I get this. I get that. I knew it was something. I remember that one.
Yeah, it was with Beeman McPhee and J.J. Quinn. We had a three-person show. It was kind of like a kind of a weird conglomeration of talk and humor and jokes and contests, and it was wild and crazy. It only lasted a couple of years, but it was fun.
But you did interview some interesting people. I remember calling the show, and I even have some tapes of it.
Wow.
Because I thought it was kind of cool. Yeah, because it was almost opposite from the other show that had, John Ellingston or Ron Ellingston?
It was Ron Ellingston, yes. Yes, Ron Ellingston.
Yeah, and that was a little bit more conservative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one interview that I remember from that show was Soupy Sales.
No.
Yes, we actually interviewed Soupy Sales.
I missed that one.
Our friend Beeman McPhee happened to know his agent, and so he called him up and got him on the show. It was a delightful hour. It was wonderful.
Any recording of it?
No, I certainly doubt that. I can't even imagine.
That was back in the days of typewriters,
yeah,
Elena.
Yeah.
God, do you know that Russia went back to using typewriters because they didn't trust, doing everything on the internet? But anyway, I was in college when Soupy Sales was a big thing for us students. I mean, they used to have the TV in the lounge, and we used to watch it like crazy. And I don't know if you guys remember this, the one. Wait, remember when he always had a knock on the door? He went to the door, opened it up, and a big dog's paw came out and hit him on the head or tried to grab him. Well, one show, and this you can find online, he goes to the door. Now, you never see who's behind that door. He opened the door, and the look on his face, the reason is that the studio crowd put a naked woman standing there. And this is live TV, right? Oh, my God, that was hysterical. Anyway, okay, good reminiscing. Back to you, Walt.
Uh-oh.
A question.
By the way, we're all fully clothed in the studio,
yeah.
So just so you know. But go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's why. Remember, you used to have it live. We used to watch you in the studio.
Yeah.
Ta-da! Because you don't get dressed all the time, I know. Listen, silence. Okay, anyway, Walt, As you guys all know, and I guess you know, there's a big thing happening in Granite County, and we're going to have a, hopefully a turnover with local government. Can you explain a forensic audit?
Oh, okay. Well, the only difference between a regular audit and a forensic audit is that the report goes to a court rather than just to stakeholders like boards of directors or county commissioners and whatnot. So a forensic audit, in essence, you know, you're doing pretty much the exact same thing, only that the intended audience is either the court or a jury. And so that's why it tends to be more focused. They can get more expensive because besides just crossing T's and dotting I's, you're verifying all the significant numbers that are in there. To the extent the documentation isn't necessarily based on samples, it's based upon actually going in and digging and digging and digging, whereas a financial audit, they will use samples. And so depending upon the nature and character of the forensic audit, that's in essence the difference. Does that make any sense to you?
Yes, and usually you would get an independent auditor, not somebody who's contracted with the county, right?
Yeah. Well, somebody's got to pay the auditor.
Yeah, that's fine. Do you do things like that?
I used to. I did an audit for a school district here in the Missoula area to verify that the county was not handling funds in the proper manner. And the report went out to the school district, and the board of that school district said, well, this is what we thought, but we wanted you to back up and verify what we already knew. And
okay.
So back in the day, they have what's called permissive levies, and those are usually for school district transportation and retirements. And okay. I don't understand the nature why they call it permissive, but that money is collected by the state, by the local governments, and then submitted to Helena. And mm-hmm. what Missoula County was doing was floating on that money. They wouldn't send it to Helena right away. They would sit on it for many, many months. So,
would you consider doing one, depending on what happens here?
Oh, no, but I could recommend some people to
okay.
you. I don't.
I will keep that in mind, sir. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah, and we were talking about you before you called. I said, well, let's throw Elena a bone. And boom, you called. And you must have been either listening or read our minds.
That's like it's I said, she's psychopathetic.
Great minds think alike.
Yeah, well, I like to tease you, especially when it comes to frivolous tax arguments.
That's why I enjoy you guys. Hey, have a wonderful day.
Okay,
take
thanks,
care
Elena.
Before this big storm hits. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call, Elena. We're going to come right back. Harry is waiting, so if you don't mind waiting just a little bit longer, Harry. All of our other phone lines are open at 721-1290. Of course, Walt Curo here with us all the way till 10 o'clock this morning, answering your tax questions. We'll be right back after this.
Montana State News Network.
I'm Dennis Bragg. A very strong system bringing big wind and big snow starting today and through Thursday. In fact, it could last to the weekend. Forecasters say the snowfall could be the biggest headline here, bringing a complete turnaround to the sagging snowpack numbers. Most of our ranges are forecast to see 2 to 4 feet of snow. Winds, though, could be a big problem elsewhere. Gusts as high as 70 and even 80 miles per hour. Northwestern Energy crews have been prepping for the storm since the last one blew out of the state, and the utility reminding customers they should be prepared as well. Northwestern spokeswoman Jody Black says customers can even sign up for direct outage alerts if they have a My Energy account.
Through email or through text, and that's a very convenient way that many of our customers are using to get outage information.
As with last weekend's storm, Black reminds people to stay at least 30 feet away from downed power lines. In other news, we're hearing more discussion about possible sales taxes in Montana in the future, but Governor Gianforte wants lawmakers to look into a flat tax next year. J.D. Knight has the story.
During a recent event held at the state capitol in Helena, Governor Greg Gianforte outlined his vision for tax discussions in the upcoming 2027 legislative session. As he met with the Mountain States Policy Center in Helena, he said there's more to do, especially when it comes to lowering income taxes, and he's focused on getting it done. He says that with historic tax reform in the past three legislative sessions, it's been a good start, stating that that reform has brought Montana much closer to a flat tax. I'm J.D. Knight for the Montana State News Network.
Lots of wind and snow coming in. Past conditions could be a real challenge. Weather Service saying backcountry travel will be nearly impossible the next couple of days. But even if snow amounts aren't that great around the passes, north-south travel could be very hazardous for high-clearance trucks and other vehicles. This is the Montana State News Network.
Every act of change begins with a neighbor, with someone saying,
"We take care of each other here."
In food banks and food pantries, neighbors pack fresh food and dignity into every box, moving food from farms to families through Feeding America's nationwide network. So when that box reaches a home, it carries more than food. It carries a promise that together we can end hunger. Feeding America, led by neighbors. Take action to end hunger now at feedingamerica.org.
When faced with complex challenges, there are people who come together to solve problems and transform lives. That's us. We are Rotary. We work with community partners to build green spaces for all to connect with nature and each other. We support local youth through mentorship and literacy programs. We're committed to causes that improve lives everywhere. Learn more at rotary.org/action.
We are back. This is Talk Back. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen taking your phone calls, and our good friend and resident CPA, Walt Kuro from Elevated Tax and Accounting, joining us here in the studio. I want to say thank you to Harry for being patient through the break. Harry, good morning.
Good morning, Harry.
Yeah, good morning, Walt. Yeah, we've talked about this before, but it's real easy. People like to rail against the politicians for spending money, but they, you know, there's, we like to have things done for us, like throwing million-dollar missiles at Iran, or, you know, giving children $1,000 when they're born, or now they're talking about doing a like a pension plan for everybody type thing, or even local, you know, having the streets done right, or the, you know, getting the homeless off. And I mean, it's in that spending thing, they leave out the people who demand stuff. And it's there's an old joke saying, you know, a guy, he comes to work and he looks at his lunch and says, "Oh, geez, bologna again? God, I hate bologna." And the guy goes, other guy goes, "Well, why don't you tell your wife to quit giving you bologna?" And he goes, "Oh, she don't make those my lunches, I do." So, I mean, you know, we pretty much do ourselves. I mean, people that may not, we vote for the people in, and, you know, the majority wins. That's how, you know, representative republic works. So if we don't like what they're spending money on, we should kick them out. But we like, you know, stuff, and so we keep voting them in, and they keep spending our money. And we keep giving them money. I mean, also, the mill levies in locals, we keep voting mill levies, and that keeps boosting up our property taxes. So, you know.
Yeah, that's called insanity.
Yeah, you know, it's the way it works.
Yeah, so our system is insane. I get it.
Yeah, like I say, it's easy, though, to blame the politicians. They're just pretty much doing what we want them to do.
Yeah, well, again, that's the fourth category Milton Friedman's talking about, the fourth way of spending money. And, you know, we elect people, and those people make decisions about how to spend money on the basis of demands and whatnot. But those people, if they have a will, all you have to do is say no. I mean, that's what people do with their household budget. They say, "Oh, well, I would like to buy a new car, but my wife says no." Get it. And so that's really simple.
Yeah, but then they get next time they get voted out of office, and then you have somebody else who comes in and says, "Yeah, I'll do that."
Mm-hmm. Well,
so I mean, again, if you want to look at the real culprit, look in the mirrors.
Well, you know, it's interesting you would say that, Harry, because you've listened to the show for a long time, and you know, one of my hobby horses is people not voting. right? It just absolutely drives me insane. And then when things happen within their own state or federal government, and they're not happy about it, I say, well, what are you doing about it? Did you vote? No. See ya. You know, I'm sorry. I just have no patience for them.
Right. And I would say, you know, it's the way the system works. You know, you all the way from the top to the bottom, you know, the president, this president obviously doesn't care much about fiscal things, because, you know, we just, every time he turned around, he's spending money. A lot of time, it looks like to buy votes for the next election, because, like, say, he's trying to pass this, a pension thing for people that, you know, that, I don't know how it works, but he passed, you know, pushed out on the State of the Union speech. But so, I mean, it's just spending money, and people seem to think it's okay. So, hey.
Well, the last time I checked, there were 291,000 fewer federal employees in the federal government since he's taken office, and that was back in November. So
and yet
that's
we spend
a 10%
trillions of dollars more, though. I mean, you know, it just, that's a very minuscule thing, though. I mean, the amount of money he's spending is way above any of those thousands of people fired. I mean, he's spending money on everything else, so it's, you know, it's not really helping much. Firing a bunch of workers and not, then they got things, less things done, but you got still other people spending more money, so, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thanks. Bye. By the way, I just pulled this up, and exactly to his point, President Trump said during his State of the Union address, he wants to fix a gross disparity, that's his quote, in America's retirement system by creating new accounts for the roughly 56 million Americans who lack an employer-sponsored savings plan.
Mm-hmm.
So, I said, half of all working Americans still don't have access to a retirement plan. He said the plan is based on the Thrift Savings Plan offered to federal workers, with the U.S. government providing a match of up to $1,000 per year.
Mm-hmm.
So, golly jeepers.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. Please continue, sir.
Oh, we're to the stack of stuff.
Yes. Well, so the phone lines are clear, so stack away, sir.
All right. Item number one, numero uno.
All right.
Or in German, it's ein.
Gotcha.
We send billions to dead people. See.
What are you looking at me for? All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And then I say, see Senator Kennedy's remarks. And then I have a couple of topics that spin off of this. But John Kennedy was interviewed by Katie Pavlich, who is now at News Nation. She right. was a Fox News contributor. But there was a bill recently signed into law that aims to stop the federal government from sending money to dead people. And it's called...
Do you need a bill for that?
Yeah, you need a bill for that. Because remember, the government, you know, it's the government.
Right. Okay.
Trump signed the bill, Senate Bill 269, the Ending Improper Payments to Deceased People Act.
Oh, my God.
And that aims to permanently allow the sharing of death data to prevent and recover improper payments on February 10th. Then there's a similar bill that was introduced by Joni Ernst. And Joni Ernst, the name of her bill, you'll love the name of this bill, is Putting an End to the Learning About Fraud Act. And she did this in January of 2026. It's a direct response to the Minnesota welfare child care fraud scandal, where the losses are estimated about $9 billion. But right now, her bill is also aimed at this situation in California. There are 94,000 dead people in California that are getting phone and internet service paid to the state. Now, it's not going to the dead people, but the dead people are the shills for the state. And so that amount of money is going to the state of California. So we just talked about the fourth way of spending money. This is a classic example of the waste, the fraud, the abuse that takes place when we have all of that government spending. So
And why are people fleeing California in droves?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's has something to do with it.
Yeah, that's a piece of it. But anyway.
We're up against the break, but go ahead. Let's finish your thought, please.
Yeah, it's just, you know, Senator Kennedy, God bless him, his bill allows the Social Security Administration to share the death master file, a record of deceased individuals, with the Treasury Department for their do not pay system. So, you know.
And this, they just thought of this now.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. And I won't name a party, but there is a political party in this country that really likes dead people because that's part of their constituency. We'll just leave it at that.
Okay. We're gonna come right back. Jeff is back with another comment or question. The phone lines are open, by the way, if you have a tax question for Walt Kuro, because he is our resident CPA from Elevated Tax and Accounting, here to share his over 50 years of experience of tax preparation. So if you have a tax question, we'd love to have you give us a call. That's why Walt is here. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, this is John with Jake.
We are back. This is Talk Back again. Our special guest, Walt Kuro, here in the studio this morning from Elevated Tax and Accounting. And Jeff is back with another comment or question. Jeff, go ahead, please.
Hi, Jeff. Again.
Yeah, good morning again. Well, I don't know what you have against dead people voting. They've been voting for decades. You know, it's a time-honored tradition, particularly in places like Texas and Chicago. And
I'm sorry to hear that, Jeff, because I didn't know dead people were a preferred member of society. I thought they were just dead.
Well, dead people have feelings too, Walt.
Oh, they do? Okay.
real quick, the President Trump has initiated and I can't remember what it's called, but basically Harry talked about it, where the government put $1,000 in, and he has some wealthy donors who are kicking in some money, too. But my question is, but it's limited. It's not all kids. It's kids born after a certain date. And what I would like to see is a bill that's kind of like an IRA, but where grandparents can put money into an account for kids. We can do that now for educational funds. But we can't do it for investment funds. I would love to be able to seed each of my grandkids with $1,000 now that they couldn't touch until they're 65. But when they're 65, they would have money to retire on. It would be amazing. We'd solve the retirement problem.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jeff, here's my understanding of these Trump is called a Trump account, and they're going to be taking off about the 4th of July this year. Is when they're going to be implemented. But for kids born last year, this year, and the next few years, they will qualify for the $1,000 that will be put into their account just because of their birthday. But if you have kids or grandkids, you'll be able to put money into Trump accounts for them. They just won't get the $1,000. But
right, but there's an age or a limit. They have to be born within a certain time. Kids who are after a certain age.
Yeah, you have to be under 18.
They can't.
They have to be under 18 when you put the money into the Trump account. And only certain places are going to have the Trump account. But for whatever it's worth, the Trump accounts are only going to be allowed to invest in certain exchange-traded funds, ETFs. But in a way, that's good because a lot of those Trump accounts will be for kids who are, you know, have a 5 or 10 year investment horizon. So anyway, we'll see what happens.
All right. So I just like to see it opened up to all kids.
Yeah, well, I think it is if you're under 17, under 18.
I'll have to check on it.
Yeah, check on that because I'm pretty sure that's what my understanding is just the thing where it's limited to the kids is only for newborns and the $1,000, the seed money, if you want to call it, for lack of anything better. And Michael and Susan Dell are going to give the first million or so of those kids, 250 from their fund. So anyway.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Yep. Okay.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Dave is with us. Dave, good morning. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dave.
Yes, about Senator Kennedy. You know,
The IRS has said no, that there aren't any 150-year-old people getting Social Security checks. And the IRS also says there are very few people, dead people, getting Social Security checks. Now, Senator Kennedy says differently. What I would like from Senator Kennedy to do is put out some names of dead people getting Social Security checks. So, you know, we can see the evidence. I mean, it's easy to make claims, but I would like evidence because we got conflicting opinions here, and I would like to know what the truth is.
Mm-hmm.
And so, please.
Yeah, there's probably some kind of a law that would prevent the disclosure of those names because of privacy. But if they're dead, they're probably not going to care. But,
They don't have any privacy if they're dead.
Well, you would think.
I know, but their families have privacy.
Well, they're probably breaking the law then. If they're collecting checks from a dead person, that's fraud, and they could be put on charges of, because the dead person isn't spending the money. It's
right.
The family that is spending the money, and that's fraud, and they should be brought up on charges.
Are you telling me that someone who had a relative pass away and they got a check from the government, then they're not going to sit right down and write a letter and send the check back and saying, I'm sorry, my grandfather is dead?
Well,
I'm sorry.
My wife, when her mother died, sent letters to people saying, her mother is dead. Don't send us any more mail, period. Yeah. You know, bills or anything. She is dead. So, yes, that's what they should do. If they're cashing the checks, they're committing fraud and should be put in jail for it.
I hear you.
I just like to see this happening. I'd like to see it being reported so we can see that the problem is being addressed.
Sounds good,
yeah,
man.
But I know that the compliance issues have changed over the years, because when somebody dies, usually the funeral home or the death certificate gets to the Social Security offices, and they post those now. So they have a database of information on the people who are dying now. But 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 years ago, the IRS, or I mean Social Security, was not getting that information. So, if somebody's getting checks for a deceased person and cashing them, that's fraud. And Lord knows we have enough of that going on.
All right. Thank you for the call, Dave. And we're up against a break. The phone lines are clear and open. If you have a tax question for Walt, give us a call. If you're sitting down and you're looking at your income tax thing sitting on the table, you say, I don't want to face that. And if you have a specific question, Walt is here to answer that question. But only about 50 years of tax preparation experience.
Just a few.
So, and he's here to share that with you. If you have a question or a comment, at 721-1290 is our number. Coming right back. Hey, welcome back. This is Talk Back. Phone lines are open for Walt Caro at 721-1290, 1-800-568-5309. Looks like the phone lines started to light up, but some things that you would like to talk about, sir. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Well, with this fraud theme going on this morning, there was a fraud that the SBA uncovered, and it had to do with a contractor called ATI Government Solutions. And this was...
There's an oxymoron.
Oh, my God, Media Group.
There's an oxymoron for
yeah.
you.
Oh
Government
my,
Solutions. Go ahead, yeah.
Yeah,
sorry.
Oh, my God, Media Group, that O'Keefe Media Group.
Okay.
The amount involved was $100 million. And so this that fraud was found, and that government contractor was cut off. Anyway, the SBA was, because of COVID and all the outfits of that, SBA was relied on heavily, you know, to keep people employed and whatnot, so they lent out a lot of money. But here again, you got people spending other people's money, and we know the story.
They just kept on spending.
Yeah, there was a guy in Bozeman that used a bunch of loan money, buy exotic cars and whatnot.
I remember that case.
That was busted.
They went after him big time, too.
Yeah, so we got some callers.
Yes, we do. Let's get right back to the phones. Jerry is waiting. Jerry, good morning. You're on with Walt Carroll. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Jerry.
Hey, thank you for answering my call. I'm down here in Arizona, so I'm a little bit hour earlier than you normally start. But here's my question, and I got one. There's a lot of people who are calling in and just kind of shooting whatever, and I sure wish they had asked questions and get to use your intelligence. So I've got a FBI. I'm kind of struggling trying to get my tax package into you.
Yeah.
And I've had a problem getting 1099s from the First Interstate Bank. And I called them, and I had a small kind of a revolving note last year that I kind of paid off and would pay occasionally interest on it. And I paid something like $300, and I called them and asked, well, why aren't you sending me a 1099? They said, well, if your interest isn't over $600, we're not going to send you a 1099.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering how in the world to treat that. And the other one, I heard you mention something like the LLC financing is due March 15th or something.
Yeah.
And we've got a small rental LLC with my wife, and I'm not even near finishing. I'm trying to figure out that thing. So maybe you could clarify some of these issues.
Sure. Jerry, for you and all of our clients, because I had another client ask the same question, and we were talking about this off air, all the entity returns and entities including limited liability companies, LLCs, limited liability partnerships, LLPs, S corporations, C corporations, those entity returns are due on March 15th, which this year happens to be Sunday. So you have until Monday to either file a return or get an extension. To get back to your question, Jerry, the folks at Elevated Tax, the people that merged with us, got the extensions for all these entity returns if we didn't have them done on March 6th. So on March 6th, the extensions were filed, and as far as I know, the last one I checked, it was accepted by the IRS on March 6th. So for you, I can almost 99.9% guarantee that your LLC already has an extension filed.
Super. Thank you for that.
Yeah, but the question is, yep, is what do we do with these rascals at the bank and no 1099? Well, you can just use the information you have, because the good news is you're using the best information you have available. If FIB is not going to send out a 1098 for interest expense because it's under $600, well, you just use what you have. The good news is the IRS is not going to be able to argue, because they don't have the information from the bank either.
Okay.
Okay. Does that sound good? Does that sound like a winner yeah, chicken dinner?
Yeah. Yeah. Relieve my mind. I can go out and play golf today and not worry about it.
I wouldn't worry about it.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
Good luck. Yeah, good luck playing. Hopefully it'll be better golf where you're at than it's going to be here. But let's get Alan on the line. Alan, good morning. You're on with Walt Carroll. Go ahead.
Hi, Alan.
Good morning. Good morning. Hi, Walt. I've called in late. I've missed the program. You might have already addressed this. I've got a second home that we rent out. Where or how do I file, and by when do I file this exemption or this tax break, whatever that they're talking about for a second rental?
Oh, okay. What you're talking about is that in Montana, the legislature, shuffled the decks on property taxes. And so residences and long-term rentals get the reduced property tax brackets, and that's what you're talking about. You can go online and get that form, but your rental has to be more than just a few months. In fact, I think it has to be for like a year or longer. And then it'll qualify for those reduced rates. But if it's a short-term rent, like an Airbnb, not so good.
Yes. Oh, no, this is a long-term rental.
So. Yep, you'll be good. Okay, you'll get that reduced property tax, but you got to apply for it. And there's a, I don't have the form in front of me, so I couldn't tell you.
If you contact the Department of Revenue at the state of Montana, they'll get you one.
Yeah, and you might be able to grab it online.
Okay, thank you. That's what I needed to know.
Okay.
Great, thanks.
Yeah, well, good luck, Alan.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks
bye-bye.
For the call. With that perfect timing, we're up against our last break, and the phone lines are open and clear for the next 8 minutes. If you want to talk with Walt Keir, you have a tax question like the ones we've just received, that's why Walt is here. 721-1290 is our number. We'll be right back in 1 minute.
Hey, if you're waking up.
Hey, we're back. This is Talk Back. 721-1290 is our number. Phone lines are clear for Walt Keir. Got another 8 minutes, and so the floor is yours, sir.
Oh, boy. Well, I haven't hit on all my fraud topics, but the IRS has issued a new version of their old Dirty Dozen.
Okay.
There's one new tax fraud or fabrication that's cropped up, and it's new, and they put it on their Dirty Dozen. There's been an increase in filings of this Form 2439 called Notice to Shareholder of Undistributed Long-Term Capital Gains. And it allows shareholders of certain investment funds or real estate trusts to claim a refundable credit for taxes paid on undistributed capital gains. So, anyway, that's the new scam that is out there that the IRS is targeting. It's the newest of the Dirty Dozen.
All right, let's get right back to the phones. Alan is on the line. Alan, you're on with Walt Keir.
Say, just a quick question. If I have investments in E-Trade and I have made gains on those investments, but I have not taken them out or deducted them, can I still get taxed on that? Are those unrealized investments?
Well,
that's my question.
Okay, Al, this is real easy. If the item has been sold in the account, the answer is yes, you got to pay the tax on it, whether you've taken the money out of the account or not. If you have not sold the investment and it's sitting as an unrealized gain or loss, then the answer is no, you don't have to report that. So inside that E-Trade account, and it doesn't matter whether it's E-Trade or Robinhood or D.A. Davidson or whatever, if you have an investment that's sold, you're going to have a taxable event based upon the date of sale. So was this a holding gain or is it was something that was sold?
No, it was a holding. I mean, I've had it sitting there for a year or two and it has some gains, but
no.
They sent me a 1099 and said, you need to report this on your tax.
If you got a 1099, then the only reason they would have that is something got sold.
I didn't sell anything.
Yeah, well, that might be true that you didn't, but did your broker do it for you?
I don't think so. I'd have to check.
I would check because I think somewhere along the line that happened. Because the only reason you get a 1099 is based upon an actual trade, an actual transaction.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your time and trouble.
Yeah. Hey, Alan, hey, let us know what happens because it's always kind of intriguing when these kind of things pop up.
Thank you. I'm anticipating changing my accountant. Who are you?
Well, sometimes, Alan, it plays to be Chief Inspector Clouseau and just keep digging until you get your answer.
All right. I'll work on that. Thank you kindly.
You bet, Alan.
Thanks for the call, Alec. We have about 4 minutes left in our time together, Walt. So, and the phone lines are clear. You can still call if you want. Quickly, 721-1290, but go ahead.
Okay, the rest of the Dirty Dozen.
Yes.
Now, these are repeat offenders from prior years.
Gotcha.
We got IRS impersonation through email, text, which is called phishing and smishing.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, there are now more sophisticated AI, artificial intelligence-powered IRS phone scams.
Lovely.
So, yeah, it may sound and look like the real deal, but it's fake. So, just be prepared to the people in the radio audience. If you get a phone call from the IRS, just ignore it. Best thing to do is hang up.
They do not communicate via the phone.
No.
It's always that evil letter that you get in the mail that has IRS on it. That's the one you want to pay attention to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you get mail, that's a different matter. But a phone call, tell them to go, I like to say, this is a nice thing to say. Go fish, if you've ever played Fish, the card game.
Yes.
Go fish.
Yes.
Anyway, fake charities. Watch out for fake charities, because sometimes, fake charities will try to get you to give them money.
Interesting you would say that, because Missoula has more nonprofits per capita than any other city, I think, in the whole region.
Yeah.
And so you got to be really careful. They're all worthwhile. If you believe in them, support them. But you got to be careful.
Yeah. And the easiest thing to do is, if a charity is really bugging the snot out of you, you just say, do you have your IRS determination letter? And they should be able to provide it to you. And that letter will give their employer identification number, and it'll say, under this, this, and this, and this, you are a qualified charity. So that's the easiest way to deal with that one.
And but one would think that any organization that is legally doing that would be happy to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, especially if it results in a contribution.
Mm-hmm. You bet.
So
now, some more of the dirty dozen. Misleading tax advice on social media. So be careful of social media, Facebook, Instagram, all those things. That's kind of like being in a bar and and talking with somebody who's half blitzed and saying, I did this. Well,
Don't do that.
It just take it with a grain of salt or a grain of pepper or whatever you want to use. Identity theft targeting IRS online accounts. So never, ever give out your personal information on that.
Speaking of information, let's talk about you and Elevated Tax and Accounting and what you do. So please.
Yeah, okay. Well, Elevated Tax and Accounting merged with us at the beginning of January 2025. And that's part of my steps towards retirement. But anyway, they've been good to work with, and things are going to work out. We're downtown. We moved our offices to 101 East Front, which, if you know, is the First Interstate Bank building.
Right.
We're on the second floor. Our phone number is 406-549-2288. Again, 406-549-2288.
Walt, always a pleasure, and thank you so much.
Yeah, well, thank you. This went by in a hurry.
It certainly did. They always do. All right. So, Mr. Nick, as we look forward to Thursday's fabulous show, sir.
Yeah, from 8 to 9, we're going to have Trey Loch-Oriordoin from the Irish Studies Program at the University of Montana, talking about St. Patrick's Day and some of the events they have coming up, and obviously the history of everything. And then from 9 to 10, Congressman Ryan Zinke will be in studio taking your calls.
Fantastic. All right. There's a lot going on in his life as well. So thanks so much to Walt Carroll, and thanks for all of our callers this morning. You guys always make it great whenever Walt is here. Get out there and enjoy the day. We'll see you tomorrow morning bright and early at 8 o'clock for another edition of Talk Back.